Welcome into a daily editorial here in the KE Report. I am chatting with a good friend, Mark Chandler. He is the managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes a great daily blog called Mark to Market, which I will post a link below this interview. Mark, let's start off by talking about, I think, news headlines that a lot of economists are going to be focused on, and they all deal with Brexit. This week, we are going to get quite a bit more clarity due to the potential of a number of votes being undertaken. You outlined all this to me off mic, so I want to give you the opportunity to share the timeline, what we are going to be seeing this week when it comes to Brexit.
Yes, you're right. Brexit is coming to at least a mini climax this week. First thing happens is tomorrow, on Tuesday, March 12th, the House of Commons will vote on whether to accept the withdrawal plan, which was negotiated between the EU and Britain over 18 months. The first time the Parliament voted on it, they rejected by historical margin. But now they were approaching the end of the month when the UK is going to leave. There's no deal. There's no alternative. Many people might end up voting with the withdrawal bill, but it still looks like it's going to lose. Still losing by over 400 votes. Maybe it loses by 150 votes. And in which case, then the next day, Wednesday, the 13th, Parliament will vote on whether to leave even without a deal. There are a handful or so Tory members who lean that way. But it likely also will not get a majority support. So what that means is the next day, Thursday, House of Commons is going to vote on whether to seek a postponement. And while that seems to be the most likely scenario after rejecting the first two alternatives, the worst thing that could happen is if this also doesn't gain a majority. And here's why it might not. First, the EU is going to demand more money, 50% more money, for extending the duration. So instead of $9 billion a month, $12 billion. Second thing that happens, I think, is that it keeps the uncertainty hanging over. So if they have a one-year delay or two-year delay that some are talking about, it just sort of keeps the business paralyzed about what does this mean. So I think that it's possible that none of these things happen. But this is the whole game of brinkmanship. The next focus then, after this week's events, no matter what happens this week, the next climactic point will be the sort of reaffirmation or the confirmation at the March 20th, 21st EU summit. This would be the last place for a compromise ahead of the March 29th exit date. This would be where they would agree to a delay, if that's what's going to happen. This is where they'd agree to some kind of last-minute deal to provide a smoother exit for the UK.
So, Mark, let's assume that we don't get any sort of a deal and we get up to that UK summit March 20th and 21st, which is closing in on that one deadline. What's the chance, do you think, of this just continuing to be delayed, maybe for another year, maybe indefinitely? It doesn't seem like the parties are coming to any sort of agreements or making any sort of headway, for that matter.
Yeah, that's the Trojan horse. That's what Prime Minister May is threatening. Says if you do not vote for my withdrawal bill and those who are opposed to it win a postponement, they're going to turn this postponement into reversing the 2016 referendum. Whether that is by having another referendum or maybe along the lines you're suggesting, just keep postponing it and delaying it without ever coming to a resolution. And so that's what May has done, is she's brought them to the edge of the abyss. On one side of the abyss is her plan, negotiated over 18 months. The other side is this vast unknown, and she paints the unknown as a reversal of the referendum. And without the EU offering, the EU had a pretty difficult or very hard-line negotiating stance, and the 26 negotiating countries haven't broken at all. And so this really aggravates, and this sort of like sort of stems or gives the sort of emboldens the British. And they don't like this. They don't like that the EU has been so uncompromising. And this is also hardening opinion in the UK, where the no-deal exit is a possibility in a way that maybe in the markets, which are taking sterling now, sterling had fallen about 8 days in a row to begin this week. It was extending its losses, and then some news came out that made people feel optimistic that some kind of last-minute deal would be struck. And sterling has already rebounded a couple of cents, and which is really a couple percentage points, to basically be back above where it was when during the ECB meeting, for example, last week.
So how do you see this playing out for economies, markets, and currencies? As you said right there, sterling has been quite volatile, but some positive news or potentially positive news did help recover 8 days of losses. Without any clarity, though, how do you see these markets playing out?
Yeah, no, this is a tough question. I think, I mean, the volatility is going to be great. I think that the lack of transparency, so for myself, I mean, I think that it'd be like catching the momentum. So we've had an eight-day down day in a row, and now we're getting the short squeeze, correcting that a bit. I think that there still might be a little bit more up room for sterling. I was still looking at 134, 135 area. On the other hand, you know, we did dip to below 129, actually, yeah, a little bit below 129. Earlier today. So it's been quite volatile. I think that this is not really a market for like short-term traders who have like the small stack. You need like deeper pockets to play this kind of volatility.
So do you see Brexit, whether we get a deal or whether it gets kicked down the road or whether they go back to a whole new referendum, do you see this back and forth impacting other economies around the world or even just some of those more specifically in Europe as well?
Yeah, it's not. This uncertainty is another one. You know, last week a lot of people are talking about Draghi and talking about like how in a dark room you're supposed to, you should move, but you got to move slowly. To explain his like small steps he's taken. I think the more telling thing when he talked about pervasive uncertainty. I think that's a better catchphrase for what he was talking about. And I think specifically the UK uncertainty is going to be last quite a while because I'm not sure we're going to get a really closure anytime soon. In the sense that it's still not going to be how they negotiate their new trade agreement and the consequences for countries like Ireland, who the UK is the biggest trading partner, or for the continent itself, where the UK is still a major player, where its companies are important, where the financial sector is important. All these uncertainties just continue to linger. I don't think anybody wants to pick, I mean, everybody, I think, wants to get it over with already.
Well, it seems like all we are hearing about is uncertainty around the world, weak global growth, even slowdowns in many countries, and now all these central banks turning a bit more dovish, almost being in a dovish pause situation. I've talked a lot about it today already, but what do you think? Is it getting maybe a little bit overdone? The fact of the matter is, yes, we're seeing slowdowns around the world. Central banks are trying to actually get in front of these slowdowns, picking up steam. But you look at some of the market reactions, and markets can be a very good leading indicator. They are not just falling out of bed, as you would maybe expect if the economies were falling out of bed, what some of the naysayers are saying. Where's the balance here?
Yeah, so I think you're right that the my sense of the pessimism is overdone. And I think that this could be the week that we see a turn in sentiment. Like, and a turn on sentiment, I mean by how the markets, people are talking about the economy. Perhaps it was really on Friday we had the U.S. jobs data, 20,000 job growth. That means that Canada, which is about, what is it, about a ninth of the size of the U.S., a tenth of the size of the U.S., grew something like three times more jobs than the U.S. did. So the market knows there's something sort of off with the data. Just like the January over 300,000 increase overstates the case, the February data probably understates the case. The truth, as often the case, lies in the middle. We take a three-month moving average, which is still at 185,000. So I'd say that the market recognized that and saw through some of the economic weakness. The stock market had gapped lower, closed on its highs, filled the gap, followed through buying today. So here's what I think is happening, is that we're going to see some data that's a little bit better. In some ways, we already have. The PMIs in Europe are already turning. Last Friday, France, Italy, and Spain reported stronger than expected industrial production numbers. Today, the U.S. reported stronger than expected retail sales. Later this week, the U.S. will report industrial production for February, and that also looks like it serially increased. And that's the important point here. It's not that we're growing like we did in Q4, but what's happening in the U.S. is that the economy seems to, I think globally, something bad happened in December. We saw with the stock markets, We saw it in the economic data. But the good news is that that's history. And there was, whether it's January or February, the economic data for the major economies, leaving aside maybe Japan, that the China, Europe, the U.S., I think the economic data, Canada, the economic data for the January-February period began to look better. So what I think happened is December, economies fell off a cliff, carried into January. We saw in the U.S. a government shutdown, the unseasonably cold weather, and now the economy is recovering from that. So I think the pessimism overdone, and we're going to be, and how we're going to be able to monitor this, is for a while now the economy, economic data has been surprising economists' forecasts by being weaker. So the economists rushed to tell a pessimistic story to revise down their forecasts just in time for the economic data to come in better. So look for those upside surprises.
So overall, it doesn't sound like you think that we're going to see the economies start to get into a situation where they're just screaming higher, but this consistent downtrend that they have been in, you think we might get a couple breaks from those consistent, what I guess you could consider like lower levels, almost as if you were reading a chart.
Exactly. So I'm thinking then that what happens is that this was a late cycle slowdown. We get another push up, and then maybe late this year, early next year is when the real test comes. Sort of like a B movie. The first loud noise you hear is not the real monster, it's the second one.
Good analogy. And you know what? Even with that time frame of a little bit of a bounce coming or some settling down, and then looking more at the end of the year into next year, you're not alone in thinking that. Remember, nothing moves in a straight line until some momentum really gets going. But right now, these markets are still holding up relatively well, and that does need to be taken and understood that markets do lead a lot of data and a lot of sentiment. Mark, great chatting with you. Everyone, click that link below. Visit Mark's site, Mark2Market, for more great daily comments from Mark Chandler. Mark, have a great rest of your week.
Great, thanks. Good luck to everybody.